Galettes are flatbreads that can be savory, so they can be the main course, or they can be sweet and served as a dessert. And this week, I'm taking you to a special cider dinner that has both the savory and the sweet, and paired with Eden Specialty Ciders. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world.
Hip, hip, hooray!
This week's episode is number 298. That means we're two episodes away from episode 300. Now, this whole past year is what I call season six, and that means that Cider Chat has been on the air for 6 years. I just have to like inhale and exhale on that one. Going out every single week, and there is a huge archive of episodes. And to help me kind of be able to take all that in, because believe me, it's a lot to take in as a podcast producer and host, I have been enjoying going back the past couple seasons each week. So on episode 297 last week, I featured clips from season four. This episode here, we're going to be looking at some clips from season five to kind of help us look at that year. And the interesting thing about season five is that it was the year, you know, 2020. I kind of started that season on the tail end of 2019, and then that entire season five went all the way through 2020, which, just for the historians out there, and just to kind of remember, because probably like me, there's been a bit of a time warp for the past year and a half plus due to the pandemic. It was really powerful for me to look back into the archives over season five and try to remember, like, what did I do there? I'm looking on an Excel sheet where I keep all the episodes that I did and different links and stuff to kind of keep things organized. And looking at episode 201, which was the first episode for season five, you know, it started like normal. I had a series of episodes from the folks out in the Finger Lakes region because earlier that fall, I had been out on a special tour that was hosted by Visit Ithaca. And I did a number of recordings. I had Black Diamond, Redbird Cider, and Redbird Orchard, Finger Lakes Cider House, South Hills Cider. You know, it was just kind of normal, you know, happiness, you know, talking about different cider makers and their specialties and a beautiful area out in New York State. Then I had a number of archived episodes that I hadn't really like released yet. And that was with the folks at Duck Chicken in London. And that was, you know, something that I also recorded earlier that fall in 2018, because I had been able to go to the UK and head to the Ross Cider Fest, where I also met Andy Hallett of Hallett Cider. So he was one of the featured guests in season five. And around that same time, 2020, many of us in the U.S. and even abroad were gearing up for CiderCon 2020, which was held in Oakland, California. So like many CiderCons, I had done a little pre-visit, was able to do that. So I had on Dana of Crooked City Cider in Oakland, talking about her wonderful little cider bar there. Thankfully, she's still in business. We also had Mike and Olivia of Redfield Cider Bar and Bottle Shop, also in Oakland. Again, they're still in business. Whew. And then a really happy, really amazing episode called Calvados and American Apple Brandy Tasting. And that was with Ambrosia Borowski and myself. We were doing a presentation and tasting on that. That's really cool. That's episode 208. And yeah, talking about the Northeastern Cider Conference, which was going to be taking place in March of 2020, and what to look forward to that, you know, and all the different workshops. In fact, I was set to speak at that on tourism and what makers and areas could think about, but it was canceled because of COVID. And that's when the world really started kind of coming down. Moving a little bit further into like episode 217, I did what is called the Omnia Era of Cider. And it was a featured for like the Palms and Art category of Cider Chat, where I talk about art and how you find apples or pears or quince in different works of art. And this time I kind of meshed it up a bit, looking at art for cider makers in terms of the craft and also for painters and artists during the different ages, and how we don't expect art to stay stagnant from, 200 years ago. What people were painting 200 years ago changes to what they're painting now in this century, for sure, right? We expect that. That's normal. So there's different eras for painters and artists. So of course, we're not going to be making cider like they used to in, New England back in the day, because there's all these like new yeast going out in the world. It's just not going to taste the same. It's going to be a little bit different. And because people are different too, and we're always evolving, even our ciders are different. So I have dubbed this era of time right now of modern cider, not just calling it modern cider, which is just so clinical, but the omni-era cider, where anything goes. Like it or not, we are in that era right now where you have fruit ciders, you have spice ciders, you have collaborative ciders where folks are working with different wine grapes. The sky, again, is the limit. So that was on episode 217. And, it goes on. Then I did a whole series called the Quarantine Quad Series with Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider. Just a fantastic series. It's all on helping us become better cider makers. And this is such a, an important topic for us all that I decided to do a 6-part series later on in season 5. And I thought, considering it's a fall and there's a lot of people right now with cider bubbling away in their cellars or in their apartments, wherever you are in the world, and you might be having some questions about, next steps, this is a good time to provide you with a reminder. So this clip comes from episode 242, which was actually titled Select Your Perfect Cider. And that's a whole other topic, isn't it? Which is a great one to remember that you might want to listen to this episode 242 on selecting your own cider for holiday gift giving, which is happening right now. But also, this clip that I'm going to show you is me sharing what happened right before episode 242 on the cider making series. So let's roll to that clip now. I've just finished a cider making series, a 6-part cider making series. So you might want to check that out if you are entering the fall right now in North America and thinking, wow, people are talking about cider and how to make cider, and I feel a little overwhelmed. Well, we made that pretty simple for you. So you could just go to the catalog, or what we call the archive, of all the episodes before this episode 243. And that will definitely set you on your way. Basically, 236 was how to make cider. And then we got into conversations with folks at Stormalong Cider in my state of Massachusetts. That's where they're located. And they gave 3 rock solid episodes all about how to keep things safe and clean in your barn, your, do-it-yourself cider making scene, or at a commercial operation. And then I kind of took the helm back again and started looking at both the process of, once you've made the cider, what do you do for the couple months in between before you bottle it? And then last week, I talked about bottling cider. That 6-part series began with episode 236 titled How to Make Cider at Home. And what I recommend, if that interests you and you need a refresher or to kind of brush up with some really amazing info, that entire series was just fantastic. We had the folks from Stormalong Cider, just great, great stuff for both enthusiasts and professional makers. Just go to ciderchat.com/podcast and you'll see a list of all the seasons 1 through 6, and go to season 5 and to episode 236 and you'll be fine. Walking through the orchards. Season 5 was so interesting because, started out great. I went to CiderCon in Oakland, then I went to France for a month, prepping for a cider tour and going to Cider Expo and seeing all my good friends there. And then the world shut down. But, you know, as the fall rolled on, I was really holding out hope, so much so that way into the early part of the summer, I kept on advertising for a UK cider tour that I was hoping to lead that fall of 2020. Well, that did not happen. It just didn't. But other things did, such as a quince taste test led by Vermont Quince. And that's a company that just works with quince, and it's Nan Stefani. And she sent out this amazing package to do a quince taste test where she had juiced it, she had stewed it, and we were able to taste also the quince raw. So it was really quite something. I did this with the nose. And I'm going to go to a clip now. So this is from the New England Quince Taste Test, episode 248, 2020.
Do you know what I just learned?
What?
To eat the quince?
Mm-hmm.
To eat the quince is slang meaning for to get into serious trouble. And It seems apropos that we're doing this.
Again, that was episode 248, titled The New England Quince Taste Test 2020. And you heard speaking there someone that we all know as The Nose. I also have one final clip from season 5. I had to go into it because I really didn't know what it was about. It's episode 249, and it was titled Old School Cider for Modern Times. And it's kind of hilarious because it's actually Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider interviewing me as I was cresting the 250th episode of Cider Chat. And, you know, it's one of those things during this pandemic I totally forgot about. So let's take a little clip into that episode and to give you a sense of, if you want to go back into the archives and hear a little bit of my story, what he was gearing towards in this interview.
As you crest the threshold of 250, which is in itself incredibly impressive. And so I have four categories of questions for you.
Okay, four categories.
As Rhea Windcaller, Conema, cider maker.
Okay.
So you interview a lot of cider makers on the show. And I know that you make cider because I've had the opportunity to drink it a few times. So I wanted to ask you questions as a cider maker.
Okay.
So I've developed four categories. The first one is how. The second one is wild. The third one is why. And the fourth one is a mystery box.
Shoot, I'm ready.
Sure.
It's so interesting for me to go back into the different seasons, and specifically in this particular episode, we're looking at season 5, episodes 201 through 250, and seeing where the state of the world was. And that was 2020, and the world was not what we had expected 2020 to be, I'll tell you that. And I'm sure glad we're on the other side of that, and things are looking up. And how nice to kind of end that season with my good friend Ryan Monkman at Fieldbird Cider up at Prince Edward County in Ontario. The American Cider Association invites you to their 12th annual CiderCon, a global cider conference for cider professionals. CiderCon is taking place February 1st through the 4th, 2022, in beautiful Richmond, Virginia, at the heart of a celebrated cider region. With tours, tastings, educational workshops, demos, and more, CiderCon's return to an in-person event is bound to be one of the most energetic CiderCons to date. Special highlights this year include a Wednesday afternoon add-on session focusing on beginning and intermediate holistic orcharding, including site selection and seasonal care. Mike Bilton, co-owner of Know Your Roots, will lead the session, which will cover discussion of climate, land, and soil characteristics, as well as horticultural consideration you need to ponder before you plant your first tree. In addition, Mike will walk attendees through steps for designing their orchards and planting their first trees and what to do to successfully manage their orchard in the first year and beyond. Mike has spent nearly 40 years in agriculture and specializes in helping orchardists and farmers establish and manage regenerative and integrated farmscapes. This session is ticketed and space is limited, so be sure to register soon. Tickets to CiderCon are just $435 if you book by January 20th. To learn more about the wide array of events and educational sessions being offered and to register for CiderCon, head to the American Cider Association website today. CiderCon is an ACA member event produced with the generous support of members and sponsors. Learn how to become an ACA member or sponsor today by going to ciderassociation.org. Big tip of the glass to the American Cider Association for sponsoring this year, episode 298.
Bravo!
It's time now to talk about galettes and cider. Now, a galette is a French dish, really, and it's a flatbread that's very loose, so it could kind of be folded over, and there's a specific like galette making machine that you use. So let's say you're in Paris and you're walking about and you might see a street vendor making galettes. And I know I did that when I was in Paris. And for the sweet side, they might put a little bit of chocolate in that or some different fruits too. So it's very sweet. Or you could have it as a main meal that's super savory. Perhaps it's like a feta and mushroom galette with maybe spinach or something like that, or it might have some meats. So that brings me to the galette dinners that are being held at Scott's Farm up in Vermont. And I think this was really spearheaded by the general manager, Simone Renault, because he is originally from Brittany, France, and he has been now in the U.S. for a number of years and has taken on the role as a general manager at Scott's Farm. A really great guy. And what an extra bonus that he is now, you know, getting everyone in on galettes, because they go so well with cider. I mean, right? You know, they already have it going on in France. So I headed to Scott's Farm in early November of this year, so just a couple weeks ago, because not only were they having galettes, but they also were pairing that with cider from Eden Specialty Cider, also based in Vermont. And Eden has been using apples from Scott's Farm. It's one of their sources that they get apples from. And this site, or I should say Orchard, has 130 different varieties, and they actually supply many cider makers. So I was there that evening, sitting at a table, and I originally had it hooked up to Eleanor, but that didn't quite work, so I had to take it off of the mic I had and just put my recorder up in the air and go from there. First, you'll be hearing from Simone. He'll be talking a little bit about the scene, and then introducing Eleanor Leger, and she'll be talking about what she had at the tasting there. So they were serving two galettes. The first one was the savory. It was like the main course galette, and they had that with a salad. And then you would go up, and they would make you a savory galette, and they had different choices of the fillings for each. It was just a lovely time. If you get a chance to go to Scott's Farm, it's absolutely fantastic. It's owned by a land trust, and what they're doing there is really something. And it's pretty cool now because Simone, being from Brittany, he has a long history in his family with cider and in the region, of course, and he's made a cider, a Kieved cider. So they're going to talk a little bit about that. And I had that Kieved cider, and I will tell you, it was delicious. So things are happening. It's cool to see these orchards that have had amazing varieties for so many years, adding a value-added product. So let's head there next to Simone Renault. You'll hear him speaking. He's a general manager at Scott's Farm. And then Eleanor Leger of Eden Specialty Cider, based in Vermont.
It's a very significant time of year for us because all the fruit is in. And it takes a lot to harvest 10,000 plus bushels of apples. We have a huge crew. Year-round, there's about five or six of us, but at this time of year, during harvest, there's 21 of us working out in the orchard. We have pickers who come from Jamaica. Many of them have been coming for over 25 years and are very close to their manager, Aaron Robinson, our orchardist, who's has done a fantastic work. But But it takes a village, a Scott Farm village, to pull it off. Between the market, between our gift boxes, all the events, the CSA, all of our wholesales, and the retail, and these great nights that we've been doing. So we're delighted to have you here. If it's the first time, welcome. If you're coming again, thank you so much for your support. I also want to acknowledge the Landmark Trust USA, the owner of Scott Farm, and all the support we get from them, and of course their staff, but also all the board members and Scott Farm committee, and we're very, very grateful for their help. There too, we couldn't do it without them. It's really, I insist on it, it's a big team effort. So thank you. But tonight we're delighted to have our friends at Eden Specialty Ciders here. Eleanor Leger, who's the owner of Eden, will tell you more, but Eden Ciders and Scott Farm have had a relationship for many, many years. And they've been very supportive of Scott Farm. We've been supportive of their enterprise. It's been a great collaboration. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Eleanor. Eleanor is very involved in the cider world. She's on the president of the board of the American Cider Association. So she'll be able to give you a bit of an overview of the cider industry, but also talk about their business, their ciders. Welcome, Eleanor.
I went on a tour, and of course I ended up here because I was looking for interesting apples, and I ended up leaving here with, I think, a bag of 36, lots of bags, 36 different varieties to sort of taste and fool around with, and I ended up coming back and purchasing what ended up being 6 or 7 bins of apples that we took into our basement. We pressed individual varieties. I bought 220 5-gallon carboys, plastic ones, from the manufacturer, and pressed separately the varieties and froze them separately in our barn and concentrated them for ice cider, and then tried to figure out what would be the best blend. It was an incredible amount of work that I will never do again to come up with this heirloom blend ice cider that we launched. And the Scott Farm apples were a huge part of that. It was at least 50% of the blend, and has been ever since. And we've branched out, you know, cider. The cider world in 2007 was very different than it is today. There were 85 cideries in the whole of the U.S. There are now over 1,000. And cider kind of wasn't a thing. There was woodchuck. I mean, Vermont has played this incredible role in the world of cider, right? So woodchuck was the biggest cider producer in the country. Great little Vermont company. And we were like, oh, that's, you know, mass market and grocery store chains and stuff like that's not us. We're doing ice cider. But when Angry Orchard, which is a Boston beer production, entered the market in 2011 and filled up all the Boston beer distribution channels, all of a sudden cider was a thing. And people wanted to know more about it, and more people got into it. And we realized that because we had this relationship with people who grew amazing apples, Scott Farm in particular, that we could also make great dry cider. And so in 2012, we started making our Brut Nature dry sparkling champagne method, which we still make today, and which has a good portion of Kingston Black and Scott Farm heirlooms in it. But we continue to make ice cider, and the industry continues to evolve. Our hope is that cider made like wine, where it's all about expressing the quality of the fruit without intervention, without adding a bunch of other stuff, and also taking the time to allow the fruit expression to develop in the cider, that takes time, that will be something that continues to grow in popularity. We see more producers making better quality across the country of that kind of cider. We don't get measured by the big, like, Nielsen market data, because they only measure like grocery stores and chain restaurants, and our kind of cider never gets sold in those channels. But we do have a project to try and survey producers and get some idea of how our market, our corner of the market, is doing and how it's growing. The main thing is these incredible heirloom varieties command now a much higher price, and give small orchards a reason to keep incredible trees in the ground. We work with people who have, you know, 60-year-old trees, 100-year-old trees, and because we can pay a good price for the apples, people can keep taking care of them. And that's really what turns us on. We're going to have an amazing tasting tonight. We're going to do a flight of rare ciders that never get out to the market. So we went into our cellar, and Simal has been working hard over the past year. We're going to have a flight of four tastes. There will be Simal's Kiev cider, and I'm going to ask him to talk to you about what a Kiev cider is in 2 seconds. But it's from his homeland, Brittany, in Normandy. We're going to have a semi-dry Champagne Method cider from the 2014 harvest that's been aging in our cellar for 7 years. We're going to have the bottle of Northern Spy ice cider that's got a good portion of Scott Farm apples in it and barrel aged. And the last thing I have is a 2012 vintage of that original heirloom blend ice cider.
Well, to talk about Kiving, I'd love to talk about the region where I grew up. I grew up in northwestern France in a region called Brittany. And Brittany and Normandy on the northwestern coast of France are the two hard cider producing regions of France. Anything south of the Loire Valley, they make wine. But in Brittany and Normandy, we make hard cider the same way other people in France make wine. And it is so much a part of the culture that my 99-year-old living grandmother will still refuse to drink water. Actually, that generation, that it's no joke, that generation, you know, who grew up in the 1920s, 1930s, they always thought that they were told that water wasn't safe to drink. And hard cider, you know, it's really pressed apples that you ferment. Fermentation is primarily a mode of preservation, of conservation, right? To have a liquid throughout the year that is reliable. And that was true in the United States until, you know, the late 1800s, early 1900s. But hard cider was the staple drink of people in my family for generations. And the way they would make cider, I've been asking for many, many years. I grew up watching them make it. And then the day came when I wanted to make my own. And the first time I asked my grandmother, she said, you just press the apples, you put them in a barrel, and you just wait. And that's it. So that's what I did, and it was a total failure. You know, what people refer to as kieving, it's basically it's a wild fermentation, so there's no added yeasts, there's no added sulfites, and it's a process of really trying to slow down the fermentation, and that has to do with temperature, it has to do with removing nutrients out of the liquid. It has to do with the apples you use. A Kiev cider in Brittany, the majority of the apples that are used are bittersweet, so they're very high in tannin, fairly low in acid. And the result is, you know, it's a long fermentation throughout the winter. The temperatures in Brittany and Normandy, you know, it's by the ocean, so it hovers around 45, 50 degrees, which is perfect for that slow winter long fermentation. And, you know, April comes, March, April, May comes, and it's time to bottle. And usually there's still, you know, some sugar. There's a lot of residual sugar that allows for a second fermentation in the bottle. So it's a sparkling, effervescent cider that still has quite a bit of sugar left in it and yet has, you know, left enough time for the apples to come into their full expression, if you will. So I'm trying it out and slowly building every year, fermenting a little bit more. But I think this year, thanks to Eden's support and they're lending some fermentation tanks to us, I'm hoping this year to ferment much more than we did last year and have enough bottles to supply our little retail market for the rest of the season next year. But it's a learning process.
And feel free to give Simal feedback when you taste it. I remember the one thing I wanted to talk about, which was you were talking about supporting orchards and apples. These are just interesting data points. When we first bought apples from Scott Farm in the fall of 2007, the farm was taking all of the leftover heirlooms that they couldn't sell into the co-ops on the fresh market and sending them to a processor for very little money. I think they charged us double the processor, and that was $12 a bushel. So in 2007, we paid $12 a bushel, and today we pay $25. And we have been happy to do that. It's a reflection of the fact that there are more cider makers and people are discovering the apples, and more, also more grocery store customers too. Like, people are really discovering your amazing apples. So I just thought that was an interesting data point. Any questions, Dave? Any questions?
Thank you. Very interesting. I have a quick question about styles. Is there an American style? I know there's the English have been making ciders for a lot longer. In Brittany, probably. I know there's a Spanish tradition of cider also. That's quite a different style. I don't know a lot about it, but I wondered if you could comment on that.
So the question is about styles and how the West Country of England, Normandy and Brittany, and Asturias and the Basque region and Spain have very distinct cider styles. Like, those three styles are completely different from each other. Is there an American style? No. Is there an American style of craft beer? I would say it's creative. There is everything going on right now. Any kind of style of cider you want to find in the U.S., you can find. To this point, we're just with the craft beer industry in Europe. People in Europe are saying, oh, what's going on in cider in the U.S. is much more interesting than what's going on in Europe. And so people have been attending our, coming to our country to attend our cider conference, trying to get us to go there to talk about what we're doing and the state of the market. So it's just very creative. You may notice that there's a wand in the middle of the room. Call out that our great friend Rhea Winkaller is also here. If you don't know her podcast, Cider Chat, it is an incredible wealth of information. Interviews with all different kinds of cider makers all over the place. She's been to France and all kinds of places, and there are now over 250 episodes. When they write the history of the cider industry, that will be the treasure trove. I don't know if you heard that. The question was, how many gallons of Scott Farm cider did CMO make? Last year was only 30, and this year we're hoping to make 250 gallons. Yeah. That'll last just a few weeks in the cider, in the store. Yeah. Parties. Yeah. Thank you so much. So we're going to start doing the flight. Come whenever you want. Bring your glass. And Riley and Pete from our team, who are awesome and here with us tonight, will be helping me to pour.
I had a wonderful evening of galettes and cider. I was sitting at a table with the couple who started Whetstone Cidery. That is both Jason and Laura MacArthur, and they recently closed their cidery. It was just over the border in Vermont, outside of Brattleboro, and they just looked so joyous. You know, they realized it was just taking a lot of time running a cidery, which I think is important to kind of know. It's not one for the faint of heart. It is hard work. You know, it's not just getting the juice. You have to source the juice. And like Eleanor Leger at Eden, going around to all these magnificent little orchards and working it, you know. And as this commodity of specific apples become more select and people are wanting to really get those apples, the demand is up. And that is a lot of work. So it was really cool to meet them, because I hadn't up to that point, and I just loved how they were just so cheerful, and they still loved cider. They still make cider for their own purposes, but their business itself is closed. Also at the table was a guy by the name of Chris Kazix. I think I mentioned him in another podcast. He was out from the West Coast visiting New England, and he and another guy, Simon Horn, who I met for the first time, he came up from Providence, Simon, and was brand new to cider making. I actually had both of them over that same weekend for a cider share at my home, which is so cool. Was able to send Simon home with a hydrometer, because he didn't have all the tools and a couple 1 gallon jugs for making cider. Just was fun to be, you know, giving him some stuff that I had a whole bunch of. I was like, take it. Yay. You know, things get passed to me looking for homes, and it's really nice to give them to somebody who's really up and coming. And then Eleanor Leger sent me home with a number of these ciders that she was pouring that night. So I have actually on my desk right now two of these ice ciders. Again, the Northern Spy, which is the barrel aged, and then the Heirloom Blend. I'll tell you, the color, the heirloom blend is like a deep, dark, almost kind of auburn hue to the liquid there. And then the Northern Spy barrel age is a little bit lighter. But the taste of these two, if you want to go to dreamland and just like heaven itself, get some of these ice ciders. And then to my left, I have two bottles here. Oop, go clicking them away here. We have a 2019, it's called Stormy Weather, a dry sparkling cider. Absolutely enchanting. I'm making this recommendation. I know some of you folks out there will be getting cider for the holidays or looking for some holiday gifts. They do ship cider out. And then also this Eden sparkling cider, absolutely delicious. And I believe that this was a special too. Let me see here. I want to say it was like from 2014, but now I don't quite know. I know that you could find this regularly in the stores. And again, they do ship. So if you're in New England, you're lucky. Otherwise, you have to get it shipped your way. And I just adore what's going on there. And Eleanor is the president of the American Cider Association. I think she's up for re-election this year. And you know what? I think you should re-elect her. I'm not a member of the American Cider Association because I don't join different associations as someone in the media. But if I could vote, I'd be voting for her because she has the economic background. She's very well-spoken. And she, above all things, Eden Specialty Ciders, the people that she's working with there, they are kicking out some magnificent ciders. So big kudos. And also, geez, I want to just say, too, thank you, Eleanor, for being such a long-time supporter and contributor to Cider Chat. She kind of does this on the side in her kind of Eleanor way. Just a lovely being. And for Simon Renault, who was speaking, the orchard manager, the Keeve Cider, stay tuned next year at Scott's Farm and we'll be seeing what's coming out of there. I know that Eden lent them a bunch of tanks that they're going to be producing cider. And, you know, they went from 30 gallons and now they're going to go up to like almost, you know, 300 gallons of cider for 2022. Things are looking up. So I hope you enjoyed this little step away and a little demi-tasse of an evening out and about in Ciderville with me, because there's just nothing better. And of course, pairing food with cider, it just is upscaling the entire experience. So Galette's and Cider, check out at the Cider Chat Facebook page. I'm going to have a little short video of them making the Galette's there. I'll also put it up on the other social media channels too.
Smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
I have a little email here from a listener. It goes in the capital letters, it says in the subject line, "Congratulations. Dear Rhea, I have no wish to jeopardize your imminent 300th episode, but a big congratulations. I really appreciate the massive amount of work that goes into these podcasts in so many ways. I also wanted to say how much I have enjoyed the Christine Walter interview. She, like you, is such a great cider ambassador." Aw, thanks. And just so everybody out there in Ciderville knows, this is the Christine Walter of Baum & Cider. I believe it was episode 296. I'll put a link in the show notes to that episode. Everybody should listen to it. It's just, she's a cheerful person and a fantastic cider maker. It continues with, "Keep on keeping on. I really hope that you get a chance to run the UK Cider Tour soon. All the very best from Tom." Well, Tom from the UK, that can only be one person, and that would be Tom Oliver of Oliver's Cider and Perry, based in Herefordshire. If you don't know Tom Oliver, allow me to tell you just a little bit about who he is and his cider. Tom's been around making cider for quite a while now. It wasn't his first job, and it isn't his only job. From time to time, he is like the road manager for The Pretenders, which is just an amazing rock and roll band out of the UK, out of his region there in West Country. Pretty world-renowned, you know, rock band. And he has an ear for music, and he has a palate for cider. And as such, he's really set up himself in the worldwide cider community as a world-renowned maker. You can never go wrong with Oliver's Cider and Perry, right? He has a certain appreciation for Perry that we all really love here at Cider Chat Central. And if you have not had his cider or Perry, I really want to recommend that you seek it out. In fact, I always try to get one of his ciders on Christmas. I don't know why. It's just my yearly annual kind of like, you know, you have like your comfort food. It's become Oliver's cider on Christmas. It's just what I go for. And I'm really happy to see that it's once again being imported. There was a little lag time there from another importer that kind of went under, and it's back. It's back in the country, and we can all get it. And, you know, that's like a certainly a hip, hip hooray. So thank you, Tom. Thank you for the well wishes and the notice. Tom has been supporting the podcast each year, and it's pretty magnificent. In fact, Tom, I could say proudly that this new recorder in my hand is partially paid for by that donation. And, you know, it was necessary. So thank you so much for all that you do. And can't wait to see you until next time. And I'll be making a little announcement about the UK Cider Tour. You know I'm working towards that. On last week's episode, I mentioned Carl Ole, who is also a patron of Cider Chat. And Carl is a patron via the Cider Chat Patreon page, which is a dedicated website to help content providers like myself keep on keeping on and getting support from listeners like you. Well, his offer is that he will send a book directly to anyone that joins at the Cider Chat Patreon page at the Raise a Glass level, which is $10 per month. The book's titled is Tasting Cider, and it's written by Aaron James. So the next person that signs up at the Raise a Glass level at the Cider Chat Patreon page, you'll get that book. I'll give your name to Carl, and boom, it's going to be sent out to you. And that's just the beginning of your journey of becoming a patron, because there's all this extra content that is there specific for patrons. And also, you get a little gift, too, at the Raise the Glass. I believe it is a Cider Chat baseball cap, which is certainly a collector's item. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with that, I leave you here. This is Real Wind Caller, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms, we love orchards, and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!